This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thank you.
Jade Gulliver presents a collection of podcast interviews about podcasts and media makers. Welcome to the Podcraft.
This is episode 4 of the Podcraft, the podcast about podcasts. My name is Jade Gulliver. My guest is the voice behind the only opera show I'll listen to. He is a self-confessed fool who loves to take us on a journey of discovery on his show, The Fool and the Opera. Dan Vo, welcome to the Podcraft.
Hello!
That was quite... It should have been done visually, really.
Yes, there's so many things on the program that need to be done visually, but, yeah. You know, because the thing about doing an opera show is, you know, it's one half visual, the other half oral, and, yeah, so I'm very, yes, aware of the fact that, yeah, I'm sorry, you only get half the show with any radio show.
What I really love about The Fool and the Opera, Dan Vo, is that your show... And the way that you talk about opera makes it really accessible to someone like me who, you know, the only reason I started listening to your show was because I had met you and knew you and couldn't care less, had no background in opera, and you now bring in new fans. How did you come up with this concept?
I think the concept is sort of, it just came about. There was a training program here at the Joy 94.9. I was going to say the station, but yeah, Joy 94.9. And we trained same-sex attracted youth in radio broadcasting. I was one of those students. And throughout this course, which started, I don't know, for me in 2006 or whatever, I was still learning, evolving as a person and trying to find a sound that was me, like music that was me. I was dating somebody at the time and, you know, he liked indie music. It wasn't me, you know. Mm-hmm. Someone else liked pop music. I don't really dig Britney that much. Like, I liked listening to her, dancing to her, but when I want to sit down and sort of, you know, explore different concepts, you know, I needed to find something that was me. Mm-hmm. And I found opera, and it sort of hit the right sort of nerves, I suppose, emotionally. And for me, I just wanted to go on a journey where I could learn more about it, but at the same time, sort of take other people with me, because I think that that's the most exciting thing that you can do, you know, take other people with you mm-hmm. on a journey. And I think that's where the concept of The Fool and the Opera came from. You know, I am a beginner, and it is a show that is for beginners. So we just had to face up to the fact, you know, we couldn't pretend to know how to pronounce really difficult Italian words on the show. We just had to face up to the fact that, you know, it is going to be bad accents. It is going to be, you know, terrible summaries of opera, but the music is great, and hopefully, you know, you will come to enjoy it and find that it's not as inaccessible as most people make it out to be.
What is it about opera that you love?
I think the emotion. You know, I think when you start off as a kid, emotion comes so freely to you. You can just run around, have fun, you know, scream, yell, whatever you want to do, you do. And so your emotions kind of just come out so freely. As we grow up, I think the thing that we unfortunately do to children is we slowly lop away at their ability to express their emotion. And, you know, we replace it with this need, this drive for them to become intellectual people. You know, you just, emotions in this world are not as important as the ability to pass an exam and get into university, whatever.
Mm-hmm. You know, to be the best that you can be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the best has to be, you know, this, is it the left or the right side that is the analytical side? You know, you have to become analytical.
It's the left side of your brain.
You have to be mathematical, scientific, you know?
Yeah.
And I spent many years doing that, you know? I did a commerce course, you know? I do economics. It was weird. When I found opera, all of a sudden, like, all this pent-up emotion, it just kind of, like, came rushing out. It was like it had somewhere to go now. It had a story that it could relate to. It had music that it could feel along with. And that was what it was about opera that got me. The moment that, I think it was La Boheme, and it was at Fed Square, it was a public screening. I'm sorry, this is a spoiler, but at the end of La Boheme, Mimi dies. When she died and Rodolfo cries out, Mimi, I cried, like this tear just rolled down my cheek. And at that point, I felt alive. And that's what it is about opera. You know, people die all the time in opera. Mm-hmm. People get murdered, they get killed, they commit suicide, you know, all these sort of, you know.
Everything's high drama.
Yeah, it's high drama. It's all about death, mostly about death. But in realizing that we are all vulnerable to death, I think what opera does is it makes you appreciate how beautiful life is. You know, there is a fate worse than death, and that is to lose a love or to not love. That's what I feel about opera. It just really connects you with your emotions, and I love that.
Describe going to your first opera and what that experience was like.
You know, I probably couldn't tell you. Yeah. It's not that memorable. I dabbled in opera for a couple of years before I hit an opera that really struck a chord with me. I remember one of the first official experiences of opera, because we've all grown up with opera. We've always had Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd, you know, kill the wabbit, and all those little things that we've grown up with.
The Geelong footy theme song.
Yeah, otherwise known as the global financial crisis.
Yeah.
They caused it. A friend of mine invited me to see Yvonne Kenny, and ask anybody who knows anything about opera, and they'll say that she's one of the best sopranos that Australia has. She is an amazing singer. I've heard her things on ABC recordings and all that sort of stuff, and I really enjoy it. But sort of going there as a complete newbie, not knowing the stories behind things, it didn't really connect with me. If I was to be offered to go back now and go see her, I'd be like, oh my God, that's exciting. That's great. Thank you so much. Back then, I was just kind of like, oh, who is this Yvonne Kelly? Mm-hmm. And then I'd get corrected, no, it's Yvonne Kenny. And it's like, oh, okay. And I suppose that, you know, that kind of was where that whole need to be okay to be the fool, be okay to ask stupid questions, you know, came from, you know, because being a beginner, you're bound to make mistakes. So I had a few misses before I had a big hit. And I think the big hit was Mozart. It was Don Giovanni. Mozart's music is familiar. So that's always a good start with opera, I think, you know, something familiar. And Don Giovanni starts off appearing on stage in his undies. That was a good start. And later on, he progressively, you know, he takes his shirt off and, you know, know, all these very...
There's a lot of skin.
There was a lot of skin. Yeah, Teddy Tahu Rhodes has the best abs in the opera world, I've been told by many people. And to have this new vision of opera, for a lot of people, it's the fat lady who sings at the end with, you know, her breastplate and her horns and, you know, blah, 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 the Wagnerian singer. That was, you know, that's the stereotype. And, you know, to have this completely different view of opera was quite an experience. And then in one of the final scenes, when the statue comes to dinner, a Cenoteco, I think it is, there's these two chords. And that was it for me. Basically, Don Giovanni invites a statue to come to dinner, the statue of the father of this woman that he tried to rape, you know, and he killed him, the father, in a duel. And the statue comes to dinner. And these two chords, these D, I think the D minor, and I call them the death chords. They play out twice. And as they played, the stage collapsed. Like the stage was, these two columns just dropped, one first on the first chord and a second on the second chord. And I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, this is amazing. And then the statue appears, you know, in what's that ice, that smoky...
Oh, yeah, dry ice.
Dry ice, yeah. They had all this dry ice and he appears and he's, you know, dressed up in white and he looks like he's marble and he moves like very stiffly and he sings Don Giovanni and it's so low and you're just like, oh, it's amazing. And that was the moment when I kind of went, this is a whole new world, an amazing world where I really want to understand it and see more of this sort of stuff.
Opera has a reputation for being this kind of inaccessible, it's a high class event / affair that, you know, you have to get dressed up for and you can't wear jeans and you can't, you know, just be who you are. And if you're rich, then that probably helps. Have you, in your discovery of opera, found yourself becoming an opera snob? Are you one of them? Is that...
In some respects, yes. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to catch myself on this. I had a friend text me one day and he said, "Hey, I'm going to go see an opera." And I went, "Oh, cool. What are you going to see?" "Jerry Springer, the opera." And I went, "That's not an opera." And then a couple of months later, I ended up covering that on the show. Mm-hmm. And that for me was the bit where I kind of went, you know what? I was this not. Well, actually, I think he kind of texted me and he said, "Oh, look, so yeah, it's not an opera yet, you're going to cover on your show now." And that's when I realized that for a moment there, I had turned into the snob. And I think that in some respects, it's almost like, you know, how kids like to dress up and play doctor and they like to play whatever, you mm-hmm. know. Sometimes I think that that's what the opera is. Like, you know, all these adults wanting to dress up and show that they are something. I think, you know, you can get caught up in that, and I might have got caught up in that, but I think you don't enjoy it as much when that is the attraction, you yeah. know, to dress up and all that sort of stuff and to sit properly and to kind of sneer at somebody who doesn't applaud who applauds after an aria, because apparently you're not supposed to applaud, you know, you're supposed to hold your applause to the end. I just read in a book, The Rest Is Noise by Alex Ross, in 1882 when they performed Parsifal. Don't know if I pronounced that right. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Wagner himself applauded and said, "Bravo!" And the audience shushed him. It's very easy to get caught up in that little world of la-di-da-ness. But at the end of the day, no, I'm not rich. I don't have a musical education. I'm musically illiterate. You know, I can read a couple of notes, but, you know, I am musically illiterate. So if I tried to pretend to be something I'm not, well, I'll get caught out at some point or another.
Having said that, you do like to rock up in a nice suit, right?
Well, it's the only suit I've got. You know, I've got to show it off sometime or other. I don't get to wear it to work, so.
Getting back to The Fool and the Opera, the show that is the concept of your love of opera, how much has the show changed since you did that very first episode?
I've listened back to the test broadcast. Before I got the show, I had to do a two-hour test broadcast. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The show itself has changed me as a person. It's really allowed me to, I suppose, explore so many different concepts in terms of, you know, we've talked about really strange things on the show. Not strange things, but concepts you wouldn't expect on an opera show, I suppose. Like, we've talked about the Vietnam War. We've talked about cancer. We've talked about aging.
The Vietnam War one, by the way, was one of my favorites.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, you spoke in Vietnamese, and I really liked it. And you explained so much about you as well, and just about the culture around New Year and Lunar New Year and stuff. So I really loved it.
Oh, thank you.
That's okay. Sorry to sidetrack you.
No, not at all. I mean, I suppose that's what we aim for. We, you know, me, I. But, you know, we've got a team who helps out as well, which is a fantastic team, Jedediah Gilbert.
Yeah.
And Paul Williams as well. So Jed does all the audio production, and Paul writes all the reviews for the blog, which without whose help I would have gone insane by now. And he writes very well as well. So it's always lovely to get a review from Paul. The program has changed slightly. It probably isn't where I wanted it to be when I first started, but mm-hmm. it's kind of grown into something completely different that I find it really soothing to do. I mean, there's a lot of preparation that has to go into it, like, you know, sourcing the interviews and you know, talking to all the people doing the actual interview, because, mm-hmm. you know, not all my guests can get on the show, so there's a lot of pre-recording, editing all that down, and all that sort of stuff. But once you get on air, and once I play the theme song, I just kind of mellow out.
If you were an opera, what opera would you be?
Oh, see, that one's... You get asked that one a lot, actually. And I've got to say Madame Butterfly, which, I don't know, it sort of does make sense, but it doesn't at the same time. But because... But there's a particular aria in Madame Butterfly, and it goes, you know, on one fine day you'll see, he'll come in on a ship, this man in a white navy uniform, and he'll be on his white ship, and he'll come and you'll see everything will be perfect. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for my man.
to come in on the ship.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
If I was an opera, what would I be?
Ooh, I have been asked this one. This one's interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you would have to be one of the sci-fi operas. Some of them. Oh, see, I instantly want to say Lulu, Albenberg's Lulu, having not seen it, but I realize that she dies in the end. That's not the result that we want. So something where there's a happy ending. Oh, geez. Okay. There's not a lot of operas where there's a happy ending.
No, especially for the girl.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's usually the heroine who kind of ends up toppling off some castle or, you know, well, in my case, I'd be ending up committing suicide by hearing, this is really depressing.
How do you approach a music program like The Fool and the Opera and turn it into a podcast that makes sense to the listener?
Oh, no, it's not possible. Sorry. It's a tricky little thing. And I think that it's something that needs to be thought out a bit more. We do need to go back to the drawing board on that one, because the difficult thing is we kind of just take the program as is and then podcast it. And it's only kind of very recently that I've realized that, you know, I need to say, oh, and if you want to get in touch with us, here's the number to call. This is the SMS and da-da-da. And and if you're listening via the podcast, get in touch via the blog. So I'm really starting to learn my way around the difference between an on-air program versus a podcast. Mm-hmm. And quite beneficially, because we do interviews and we cut them back to go on air because, you know, we try and restrict the talking time so there's a good balance between music and talk. I find that because of that, we end up being able to put extra things with the podcast. Like, mm-hmm. Here's the extended interview. But in terms of creating a program that's for podcast, you really need to go back to the drawing board, because we only get to play 30 seconds of the music, and that's tough, you know? Yeah. And Jed, who's the audio producer on the show, he does a very good job of extracting exactly the part of the aria that I talk about. Like, you know, this is the part where she sings this and she's feeling this, and you'll hear the clunk of the sword. So that's what she's just dropped it, and you can find that and put it in. He's very good at that, but there's certainly a lot more that needs to be done, you know, including putting up posting on the blogs of the whole song so they can get the full experience. So being able to say, you know, and if you want to hear the whole thing and see it as well, because that's the other important about opera. And a podcast may not be enough. It might be a vodcast in the future that we'll have to look at. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, you could put your audio track along to some other visual.
Yeah, yeah. Just me dancing around in my underwear or something.
Thank you very much for joining us on the Podcraft Danvo.
Can I just say very quickly?
Yeah.
I used to run around in my undies as a kid saying I was Astro Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the underwear reference.
Oh, okay. Good.
I wonder if there's going to be an Astro Boy. You would be Astro Boy the opera.
Really? Is that because of the hair?
Yeah. And it's just a little cute.
Thank you for joining us on the Podcraft.
Thank you, Jade.
If you want to find out more about Danvo's show, The Fool and the Opera,
you can check it out at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. Thanks for listening to another Joycast of the Podcraft. For more great Joycasts and the show blog, check out joy.org.au/thepodcraft. The Podcraft is produced by Jade Gulliver, audio assistance by David Lim. Thanks to the support of Joy members and sponsors. To support the station, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.